What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strong Towns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strong Towns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action: fostering creative and financially resilient communities. In 2017, for the third straight year, Wisconsin ranked last in business startup activity among the 50 states. And worse, it stood as an outlier with a considerable and growing gap in entrepreneurship compared to the next lowest states. Lack of creativity among Wisconsin residents didn't lead to a low rate in entrepreneurship. Instead, as you'll learn in this episode, the culture of America's Dairyland has valued the traditional 9-to-5 in manufacturing and agriculture, the staple industries in the state. And who can blame them? The major employers have employed hundreds of thousands of Wisconsin workers, supporting the economy and representing the idea of work for decades in communities across the state. However, as we see repeated in communities across the nation, local economies that rely on one or two major employers struggle when those employers leave town or choose to close shop, disrupting entire communities and slashing tax revenue for the local government. That's why in this episode, we have Greg Wright on the podcast, resident of Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and executive director at Create Portage County, a nonprofit and people-centered model for community and economic development that boosts the creative economy and entrepreneurship throughout Portage County and beyond. Greg and his team find residents with big ideas, and through creativity, connection, and collaboration, turn those ideas into reality, growing the local economy from within and boosting human capital in the process. In this episode, Greg shares the story behind Create Portage County and how you can foster creative and financially resilient communities wherever you live, including how to inspire creative residents, how to demonstrate the economic impact of creativity, and why you should root all initiatives in a small and smart way. Enjoy. Hey there, Greg. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. How's life in Stevens Point, Wisconsin?
It's a pretty nice day here.
I'm happy to hear it. Well, Greg, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. We have a great action to cover together, and that is fostering creative and financially resilient communities. And Greg, I know that you know this better than anyone with your great organization called Create Portage County, which I really look forward to digging into today. It's a great story that I know will resonate with listeners as well. To get us started, Greg, I'd love to start with learning more about the inspiration behind Create Portage County. In those early days, what were you observing in communities that inspired you to start this organization?
Sure. So we actually started in 2004 as the Arts Alliance of Portage County. We were initially an arts advocacy organization. And so our initial work was really working with government and business leaders to support the arts more effectively. What happened in the process of that is we started talking more about a creative economy and the value of a strong creative economy and how creative places have impact on communities. And right around the time I started working for the organization, which was about 5 years ago, we were experiencing a projected workforce shortage of about 16,000 people, which our whole workforce is about 280,000 people, so a significant percentage of our workforce. And like many other small communities, especially communities in the north, we were seeing a lot of our younger professionals leaving for bigger cities and in more warmer climates. And so that was really what motivated our shift to Create Portage County, was the belief that creativity, a really strong and vibrant creative economy and creative place would be what would attract people back and make people rethink living in a smaller community.
Who was there like a primary employer in Portage County that you think contributed to these projected losses of employment, or was there a mix of employers?
Yeah, so what's interesting about Stevens Point, which is where Stevens Point, Wisconsin, is where Portage County, like the county seat of Portage County, is that it really has a very strong and diverse economy, unlike a lot of the other smaller communities across the state where you know, they've seen a lot of hit when manufacturing jobs left or agricultural jobs shifted.
Sure.
You know, we have a strong insurance industry here. We have a university here. We have an actually pretty fast-growing tech sector here. And so we were running into the opposite problem of a lot of other smaller towns where, because there was such strength and diversity in our economy, jobs were growing, but we weren't keeping up with attracting people to fill those jobs fast enough. And so a lot of those really strong employers were starting to say, you know, if we can't attract the right people here, we're not going to be able to keep either the entire company or, you know, parts of the company here. And so, you know, I just had lunch today with one of our employers who's talking about an expansion. They're, you know, in the middle of growing a printing company that's in the community. And they will be one of about a dozen either new buildings or expansions that will have happened in the 5-year window from last year to the next 4 years.
Awesome, Greg. That's exciting. Yeah. So back to 2004, you guys were focused, what sounds like, mostly on being an art advocacy mm-hmm. group, getting this creative class going, a great initiative. And it sounds like y'all shifted. I mean, y'all are seeing the shifting economy in Portage County and wanted to use y'all's unique perspective and approach to contribute to it. I'd love to hear from you. Y'all had this early commitment to the creative economy. How have you found that association between the creative economy and what the city and the county is trying to do as a whole to improve its economic development?
Well, I think for us, it was really a recognition, you know, when we shifted from the arts into more of an economic development organization, a community development organization, I think what we found was unique is because we were coming at it from a historic arts organization, our focus was different from a lot of traditional economic development organizations. We weren't just looking at profit growth and revenue creation. We really were looking at how can we focus on economic development from a more person-centered human development approach. How can we make sure that people are having a really great experience in the community? People feel really supported by their community. And this belief that if creative people are supported by a community, that's what really attracts people anywhere. And so, you know, we started to look at how we could position our own resources to say to, you know, filmmakers or musicians or entrepreneurs or innovators, if you come here, we can give you all the resources you need to thrive. And you're going to have an easier time launching your project here than you are if you're in a bigger city where you're going to compete with so many other people to get noticed. Like, we can get you noticed, we can get you connected, we can get you the resources you need here quickly. And then with the proven track record of our community having these multinational companies, it is not unusual to see a company then grow to something like that here.
Yeah, Greg, I'm right there with you. There's definitely an appeal of, you know, trying to test out your ideas in small to mid-sized cities. I know I'm based here in Denton, Texas, a population of about 120,000. We have a great group of people that are pioneers in their ideas. You know, I think the first guy that comes to mind is Kyle Taylor. He's a neighbor of mine. He's really pushed to pursue open data for the city of Denton. How can we use the city's data to have more informed, data-driven projects? And, you know, Kyle, he's lived elsewhere. He's lived in Dallas, more major metropolitan areas. He could have used his skills in other areas and maybe he's kind of gone with the flow of what already exists. But as you've articulated so well, Greg, it's such a unique opportunity to take those interests and to be a pioneer in something and introduce it to your community. Do you have some cool stories of what this had looked like for Portage County? People bringing their big ideas and wanting to make it happen in Portage County.
Yeah, and we've been surprised by the amount of success we've seen very quickly. So we launched a space called the Idea Center about 3 years ago, which is a collaborative community hub for innovation and creativity. And it's everything here from, we have wood carvers who come and do a meetup here twice a week, to entrepreneurs and coworkers who are regularly working from the space. But that technology that has grown out of the space includes a company that is in labor force management for tree farms. They are inventing a product that they can put a coil around a tree and then fly a drone and measure the diameter of a tree electronically instead of going out with string, which is how historically that was done.
That's cool.
There's a company right now called The Scape that is light contrasting mobile that is looking into how babies are nurtured to sleep positively with light and the contrast of light. And so that actually was prototyped here and then printed on a 3D printer we have access to here. And so, you know, there's been cool innovations like that have come out. But I think one thing we really love is that we try as much as possible to emphasize that like arts ventures, business ventures, and community impact ventures all have economic impact. And so it isn't just new businesses that we're growing, but growing artists in the community or growing, like you said, like people who are thinking about how to run our communities or impact our communities more effectively, be that bike trails, be that public art, be that, you know, other community events, like that is just as much economic value long-term for a community as other successful business projects. And I think what we're really seeing in small towns is because you can't find enough people in your own sector to create your own little social group, these really smart people are starting to work across really interesting disciplines, right? So we have a wellness guy who does a podcast here who has gotten really into organic farming as a part of his wellness practice. And so he's met a bunch of farmers that actually use our space to have meetings. There's an organic co-op farm that uses our space for their meetings. And so he decided to do a food show, a seasonal food show that used a video production company that also grew out of the space. And again, I think in a bigger city, all three of those groups would be totally separate from each other because they would have enough people in their sector to hang out. But in a small town, like creative people have to find each other regardless of what their vantage point is.
Yes. And Greg, the theme that I'm capturing from this conversation that I love and aligns so well with Strong Towns is that, you know, Create Portage County is rooted in growing, you know, social capital, human capital, and the economy from within. You know, it's not all about throwing subsidies at getting, you know, some new tech company move into town or some new big employer to move to town. Mm-hmm. Your organization doing a great job of saying, you know, who is in our community that has great ideas? Who can we connect them with to amplify those ideas? And heck, if people from outside of town, at large metropolitan areas want to contribute, please like come join us.
Yeah.
But we're not going to let, I mean, metropolitan participants be, you know, the deciding factor if we're going to make this happen.
I love that, you know, and I think there's really great data coming out to support that too. The Kauffman Foundation just came out with a study that said that almost all actual job growth happens within the first 5 years of the company. And so if you're attracting a company that's already been open for 5 years to your community, basically all you're doing is shifting jobs. Your community may gain jobs, but another community is losing those jobs. And so it's shuffling, you know, where those jobs are across the country. Whereas if you do grow a local company within that first 5 years, they are going to create actual new jobs for your community. And so there is a really strong, you know, strong asset in investing in those local companies. And then you think too, just about the, you know, we talk a lot about the direction of creativity. If you are growing creativity locally and exporting it to other communities, those other communities are paying for that. If you are instead paying people to bring their creativity into your community, you are losing all those high wage jobs, you know, like the ownership, which also impacts philanthropy and spending. And so it's, you know, there are other layers of impact to that when you're so focused on what other communities are doing and trying to bring that to your community instead.
That's an excellent point, Greg. I want to talk more about, you know, this approach to building a more creative community and then aligning it with economic development. Is this approach, I imagine it's very unique to Portage County in that, you know, perhaps creativity is an afterthought in many cities whenever economic development is purely considered as, you know, what next big employer can we get into town? Who can we give subsidies to? You have much more of a bottom-up approach. How have you seen other cities approach creativity? And what do you think they're missing on, the ones that aren't really taking this community angle? I'm sorry, not community, a creative angle.
Yeah. So I think for us, a lot of this starts with the data point that Wisconsin actually for the past about 5 years has been the lowest state in entrepreneurship of the 50 states. You know,
wow,
we were, you know, tasked as a community, like community groups asked us to look into how to better support entrepreneurship here. And what we found was that there were all of these resources to support entrepreneurs, but they were all across this river, you know, you could find venture capital, you could find support programs and business plan boot camps and all of that sort of stuff. But there was this huge gulf in that people didn't see themselves as entrepreneurial, right? There was a culture shift that needed to happen to get people to say, like, I can see myself opening my own company. And what we found was...
Give us an example of that, Greg, because that's important. What's an example of, you know, someone who's listening to this podcast? They have probably a great idea to contribute to their community, but perhaps don't see themselves as an entrepreneur. What's an example of that that you've experienced?
So again, Wisconsin historically is a lot of manufacturing communities, right? There's a lot of loyalty to the company that is important in the community. A lot of, you know, 9-to-5 work or shift work that happens here. And so just, again, the culture of the community has historically been that my job is provided by somebody else. And that is my skill set, right? And so I may have creative outlets outside of that. I may be a tinkerer, I may be a builder, I may be an artist, but that's like a hobby thing I do on the side. But my work is supposed to be fulfilled by being a member of a company, right? Gotcha. And so I think, gotcha, especially when you think about, again, like, I mean, we in Stevens Point specifically, this is a big paper manufacturing town. And so a lot of people in our region have worked at paper mills for generations, right? But as you know, like, a lot of those mills are shutting down, and where economic disparity is hitting is people don't know what to do when the identity of that community has been so closely tied to one specific type of job, right?
Yes.
And so what we found was, if we could start to celebrate people who are doing their own thing, if we could really tell those narratives, make creativity and entrepreneurship more visible, and really do that, I mean, first through the arts, you know, just getting some public art up, getting some murals painted, getting some sculptures installed, getting some art events to happen so the community had this more creative vibe, then at those events, we could also start to bring in people who were launching businesses. So we do, we do a 10-week free live music series, and we cover that venue with food trucks, with innovators, with new tech products, with other people who are inventing their own business. And when people in the community see who these people are and go, oh, that's a normal person. I know that guy. He's just like me. They start to go, well, I could do something like that too. You know, and that's, cool. I think, especially where that piece of then having the resources to say, you know, when somebody comes to us with an idea and says, we want to do this, we say, okay, we're on board. We're on your team. We are here to coach you to success. We're going to try to connect you with all the resources you need to be successful as quickly as possible. And you're not going to do it alone. You're going to do it in this network of people who are sharing through those highs and lows of entrepreneurship with you.
And Greg, what Strongtowns loves about the public art approach is that, you know, it's a low lift to contribute to your community and to activate a space. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, I never considered it entrepreneurial, but after discussing with you, I mean, you're exactly right. This is someone who has an idea, whether it's, you know, I'm going to paint some funky mural on every trash can or put a mural on an abandoned alleyway.
Yeah.
This is equally an act of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Well, and it's visible impact that the yes. community can consume right away. And that, you know, like both yes. of those examples, the very first project we did when we shifted was we painted a mural on the side of a building intentionally cool. with a more public art feel, instead of, we do have historic murals in our community, and nothing against historic murals, but they don't necessarily breathe that sense of life into a downtown. Sure. And so we painted a much more vibrant, public art, like urban feel mural, and put the slogan on it, what the lion cannot manage, the fox can. Like this huge, small and smart is the way to go, like a way to brand the community. And, you know, and since then I've done other, you know, we just did a trash can, we called it Trash Canvas, but we painted 13 trash cans in our downtown with murals as well. And again, it's a really quick, affordable project. The entire project of the trash canvas cost us $100. And we were able to totally freshen up the downtown. But people also, like the day that those cans were painted, or the weekend they were painted, people saw who was doing it. And they were, you know, they thought, yes. oh, I should do this next year. I've got an idea for this. And I think it is, you know, more and more we've found as an organization, our job is not to have the idea. Our job is to find the people with the idea, and then to provide them the support so we can say to people, like, this isn't a Create Portage County project. This is a project that was initiated by this specific community member. You know, Katie's the reason we do house concerts. And Maggie's the reason we have the Levitt Amp music series. And, and Travis was the person who had the idea for the trash can project. And we can reference these specific community members who have had an idea, who have worked with us to execute that idea to have impact on the community.
And listeners, I hope you're catching on to this theme that Greg is sharing. You know, to be able to gather resources and gather entrepreneurs that want to make their community better, we don't have to, I know in this instance, I think it sounds like you have a space, Greg, but we don't have to wait to get a official co-working space. We don't have to wait to get some kind of grant from the city. You know, we can start off with an idea just as small as Greg mentioned of painting some trash cans. Let's demonstrate our vision. Cost $100. Let's see how folk react. I bet afterwards, Greg, you had more people asking questions, probably wanting to join this great organization. What was that phrase again? The tagline, small?
Small and smart, but with the lion cannot manage, the fox can is the phrase, yeah.
So small and smart. I hope listeners, you kind of embrace that slogan. I know it's one I will as well. It's a great approach, Greg, too. I have this idea. What's something small and smart that I can test out? I love that, Greg.
Well, and I do think, you know, to me, my understanding of the biggest reluctance for most people to move to a smaller community is a fear that they're going to leave the energy of the now, right? The big cities are where like life is happening in real time. Yes. And it's 10 years later that moves to you know, and in this day and age where the world moves as quickly as it does, like being a community that isn't responsive to those changes is really dangerous. And so, you know, people don't want to, I mean, you can't afford to economically be disconnected from the world at large anymore. And so, but that is where, you know, if you think about it, small communities should be so much more faster, you know, so much more flexible because of their size than big cities are. It doesn't make sense that big cities are changing faster than small towns are, given how few people you need to get on board to make a change in a smaller community.
So let's dig deeper into this, Greg. Create Portage County is a great example of how small towns can embrace entrepreneurship to not only build more human capital, but also grow the local economy from within. I imagine a lot of listeners are nodding their heads. We have a lot of folk there are in college towns, other small mid-sized cities that I imagine have no shortage of people with dope DIY ideas. How can listeners start to take advantage of these great shakers and movers in their community to achieve something similar in their own place?
You know, I think the thing we figured out is that it really is about the network. It really is about creating a community of people who are excited to see the other person succeed. Because at the end of the day, like the reason why a lot of projects don't get off the ground is no individual usually has all the skill sets they need to be successful. Right. And so, you know, you may have a great idea for an app, but not have the coding skill. You may have a great coding skill, but no design background, whatever it is. You know, if you're doing that in isolation, you run into those walls and they're almost impossible to get around. Whereas if you're part of a network of people and that community of people is eager to see other people succeed, regardless of if that success directly impacts them, you start to get around those walls and hurdles very quickly. And so that really has, we have a board member who calls me the connector in chief in the community. That has become our big role, like the bridging social capital piece, you know, and there's a social justice piece to that as well. Like we try to make sure that especially marginalized communities, but people who are new to the community, anybody who like historically has not had access to the networks that are necessary to be successful in their projects can use our networks to get access. And so a lot of what we're doing is, you know, doing that first round conversation with somebody to vet their project, to get a sense of what they need. And then when we reach out to somebody and say, hey, we know somebody really great, they've got a really great project, and you're a person who could be really helpful to them, because of the relationships we've fostered, that person's much more likely to say yes. And they're likely to say yes because there's a really good chance we've done the same for them at some point. And so, you know, because people trust us and because people understand that like we have their best interests in mind, we've been able to create this really collaborative community that is this lift all boats approach. And it's, you know, what's fun for us to watch is now that that's happening outside of us, right? Like I mentioned earlier, the food show, but you know, we see all these places where, you know, entrepreneurs are not just thinking about their own business, but how do I use another project that I know is out there to get exposure to this as well? So, you know, we have chefs who are cooking with you know, locally grown vegetables and locally sourced food products. You know, that we have a syrup company that does flavor infused syrups, and it's used in cocktails by bartenders using, you know, liquor that was made at a distillery in town. And so it's all about this, like, how do we find ways to purchase each other's products and services so that we continue to just funnel money through our community to each other more and more.
And Greg, I imagine most listeners, they're likely engaged in their community and already have a good idea of what a network like this would look like. You know, they're eating at the local shops, shopping at the local boutiques, maybe hanging out at the local coffee shops, seeing the kind of work that entrepreneurs are doing, but perhaps are having a hard time finding that connector aspect to their skill set. Mm-hmm. They had the network knowledge down. How do they make that shift to becoming a connector? Could be as simple as putting a Facebook page up, creating a Slack. What are some small but smart to keep that trend going? Yeah. Small but smart steps they can take to become that connector for their community.
And that's, you know, that's an interesting place where being an arts organization has been really helpful to us because we were already doing arts and culture based events, right? So we were doing concerts. We do a house concert series. Yeah. A house concert is a great way to network people, right? It's a yes. concert in somebody's living room with 40 guests. The guests, uh-huh. it's too small of a crowd to not spend time talking to each other. And if we can leverage, if we can say to somebody who's new to our community, hey, you should come to this house concert we're doing, and while we're there, we can do some, you know, like, this person, you should know this person because they do this, and you know, should know this person cool. because they have this skill set. You know, I think it takes time for people to figure out where they fit into a situation like this, and it takes time for people to feel confident enough to admit that they have project goals. But sure. it's a lot easier to do that if you're in a low-key social setting where you're just having fun, but the people around you tend to be talking about the same sort of topics, than it is if we, like, put everybody on the spot and say, okay, everybody, what's your project? What's your skill set, right? And so I think it is that we found that, like, because we were already doing these events and those events had a lot of social capital to them, if we were just more deliberate about how we were using them to connect people, we could really get people engaged faster.
I love it, Greg. And listeners, if you're curious more about house shows, we happen to have an episode of It's Little Things with the community development director of SoFar Sounds, who specializes in house shows. So if that's going to be your big kickoff event, good episode to refer back to. What's not included in the show notes. And the theme I'm also capturing, Greg, you know, if someone wants to be this connector for their community, you know, they don't have to buy a fancy suit. They don't have to stand up on stage and give an hour presentation. Let's just invite my peers to get together and just have some informal conversations about our place. Is that correct? And that's how those ideas are.
You know, I would even go as far as to say, if they're buying fancy suits and doing it in formal presentations, that's the reason why it's not working. And I think, again, that gets me back to what I said at the beginning, which is that economic development historically has been so focused on generating profit, and often for a very small group of people in a community, that there's a distrust of that person, right? I mean, when you're coming into the community to say, hey, look at me in my suit, I want to have even nicer suits, and I want to do that with your ideas. People hear this, like, they're going to take advantage of me, right? And that distrust keeps people from sharing their ideas. And that, you know, that's one of the biggest things culturally we still fight against, is people being really reluctant, people having learned that they should not tell the community what their project is, because somebody's going to steal it and make money off it, and they're going to be left behind. And so, you know, I think really understanding some of the problematic nature of traditional entrepreneurship and traditional economic development, and what the characters who have played a role in that work look like and act like, and what their goals are, is really important to doing this work more effectively. And again, for us, coming from an arts perspective, coming from, like, we want to make the community better. Not that we don't care about money. Obviously, we want our entrepreneurs to be successful. We want our community to thrive. But that is a side product of other goals that are much more about trying to activate access to the strengths of our community for as many people as possible.
And Greg, I appreciate bringing up looking at economic development beyond profit. You know, Chuck Marone, Strong Towns president, has a great story about this. There was a local donut shop in Brainerd that was ran by a local young man, you know, doing his thing, generating the profit, connecting with the community. He was the face of the store, of course. And then, you know, say theoretically, a Dunkin' Donuts would move into town. What we would likely see happen you know, a lot of the customer base that went to this local donut shop would end up going to Dunkin' Donuts. Maybe this gentleman's local place would close. And sure, maybe he has the expertise and the skill set to become the manager at Dunkin' Donuts. People are really excited. A national chain has moved into town. But consider the ripple effect. Mm-hmm. Sure, maybe we've generated more profit, but you know that this young go-getter in Brainerd is not generating nearly the personal wealth that he would have as owner of the store. He's likely not employing the local students, no longer the face of the establishment, building that human capital. So yes, we need to think about how are we generating profit, but also there is a huge human capital element as well, which I really appreciate you digging into, Greg, because it's equally important.
Well, you know, and I think too with that, that gets back again to this cultural piece. Like we still hear quite a bit, like the request for a Red Lobster in Stevens Point is huge, right? That's still like how we know we're going to make it is when the Red Lobster comes to town.
And it's, you know, trying to get that shrimp linguine, right? Man.
Exactly. And there still is, and it's, you know, it's more and more a generational divide there, but it is like, I think especially smaller communities were trained, like you've made it when whatever list of businesses select you to move into their community. Mm, and that still is, you know, that's still a lot of how economic development works. It's still a lot of how success is measured. And, you know, in the converse of that, I mean, think about like, so we have a coffee company. You talk about chains versus local companies. There's a person in our community who did the whole like West Coast coffee circuit, worked in LA, Seattle, Portland, and moved back to start his own coffee roasting business. And is now, you know, he's been named the best coffee in the world, or in the US at least. In Wisconsin, he was recently the best coffee.
That's cool.
Ruby colorful coffees, but it's a local coffee here, right? And yes, and he's now selling back to Manhattan and LA and other places like that. But again, he's located officially in Nelsonville, which is a community of 151 people, right? But again, was able to leverage the resources and support of this community to grow this really successful coffee company. And again, that has so much more impact on our community, not just in the actual economic impact, but tourists come to sample this great coffee and they learn about Stevens Point and Nelsonville in the process, right? And so it's actually attracting you know, people who are interested in the maker movement or the food movement are coming to taste that, you know, saying we've got good beer here that attracts people from all over the country to drink beer made on site. And I think that that's something people miss is it's not even just an economic boon to have those companies actually located in your community. It's actually a draw for tourists to learn about your community. And when they come here and they have a great experience, they think about moving here and that solves your workforce problems.
And listeners, what Greg is describing to a T is a term that we call, or not we, Chris Gibbons and his organization called economic gardening. We're a little bit run out of time, so we won't dive too much into it because Greg has done a great job explaining how it works. It's essentially just growing the economy from within. What existing entrepreneurs do we have in town that we can put our investment in, not only to have more jobs, but also create wealth for our community as opposed to shifting that money elsewhere. So I will include a link on economic gardening in the show notes. We have a free webcast from Chris Gibbons and a few additional resources as well. Greg, this has been phenomenal. I know I'm inspired and imagine many of our listeners as well to take a shift in how we look at economic development. And I love that phrase again, just small and smart. Let's see what small, smart investments we can make in our community and iterate from there. Greg, if anyone wants to connect with you, learn more about the great work that you're doing with Create Portage County, keep up to date on any new initiatives y'all are making happen, where can people connect with you online?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook. You can follow us there. We have a website, createportagecounty.org. Please check us out there. Any sort of contact information is available in both of those locations. But we are more and more working with communities across the country, especially small towns that are trying to figure this out. So happy to work with more partners.
Awesome. Greg, thank you. This has been a joy.
Yeah,
we'll chat very soon.
Great.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.